City Current. Produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or tune in to Radio Access 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Welcome to a Bismarck edition of City Current. I'm Mary Van Sickle. It's Wednesday, May 13th, and I am in the studios at Dakota Media Access. And joining me back again in the hot seat is Jason Timonic from the City of Bismarck. Welcome.
Hi, Mary. How are you? Thanks. How are you?
Good. You've been gone for a little while.
I was performing other duties as assigned, as our job descriptions say. So for the last 7 weeks, I was with a team of other city staffers working from the EOC, the Emergency Operations Center. So a big thanks to Commissioner Nancy Guy for filling in. I think she covered three episodes while I was doing some other work. So appreciate that. I'm glad that the program was able to continue. And thanks for having me back.
Oh, she did a wonderful job. Yep. She was... She filled in and did her other duties as assigned as well.
Yeah.
meeting last night, that's what we're here for, is to talk about the action of the City Commission meeting last night. It wasn't a very long meeting, but there were plenty of items to talk about. There are a number of items on the consent agenda that were not pulled for discussion, but we want to talk about them because the items that we're going to focus on are calling for a public hearing at your next meeting. So we just want to let people know that opportunity is available on the May 26th meeting that will be coming up. And one of those items has to do with a project, Heritage Ridge, and then a sister project, Heritage Park, up in the Northwest area. We've seen this project come in front of the Planning Commission. It's an interesting area, and it's surrounded already by rural residential properties and some single family homes as well. So it's kind of ripe for development. We're seeing that up in that Northwest area that this is coming in.
Right. Yeah, this is a project that is being driven by Chad Moldenauer of K&L Homes. And it's a second phase of development for the Heritage Ridge and Heritage Park addition. And for anybody that's not sure, it's on the west side of Washington Street and just north of 57th Avenue. And you mentioned it, this is a unique spot where urban density is starting to encroach into what is existing rural residential. So we've got some folks out there that have lived in that area for a long period of time, large lots, a couple acres in size in a lot of cases. But also the urban density started to develop in probably 2014, 15, 16 is about the time that things really started to move out there. So clearly Chad's had some success in that neighborhood, and he's moving forward with the second phases of both Heritage Ridge and Heritage Park addition. We'll see a mix of single family, two family, some multifamily. There's some townhouses and condo situations out there as well. Couple weeks we'll have a public hearing. For anybody that's interested, they can either come to the meeting or participate electronically through email. We've got information on our agenda page of how people can share their comments if they're not interested in actually coming to the meeting.
Yeah, it's obviously everything's a little different now with public hearings. You do have that information on your website. People can join in the meeting by sitting in a waiting room and being asked to join at the appropriate time. Or as always, you take written comments in advance as well.
Yep, certainly. We've got a dedicated email address for the various boards, so it's not just one email for all of them. So if people are interested in comments, I would encourage them to go to our agenda center on our website and find that information. We put it right at the top of every agenda for the various boards and advisory boards that we as the city staff and support.
Also, a call for public hearing last night was approved to discuss a zoning text amendment for your sign ordinance. This has been a long time coming. Obviously, there's been a form of a sign ordinance in place for decades in the city of Bismarck, and it's gone through a few changes over the years, but this is a big one, and it's taken a few steps to get here.
Exactly. Yeah, this is a comprehensive overhaul of the sign code that we had before. Clearly, there had been some adaptations to the sign ordinance when we saw the electronic message centers or the flashing digital signs that a lot of people are familiar with. That was one of the last significant changes. But this is almost a total rewrite of information. And you're right, it took several months to work through the various components of this. There were a lot of stakeholders involved, particularly portable or temporary signage was a topic that got a fair bit of attention and discussion. But our planning staff worked really well with the stakeholder group and different businesses in the community, and we've got a nice ordinance that's coming forward in a couple of weeks for final consideration and public hearing.
A lot of people involved in this, as you said, the stakeholders. Sign companies, obviously, are watching this extremely closely. Commercial properties, commercial businesses have a stake in this as well. One of the concerns that were expressed in the agenda packet by staff was the length of time on the temporary signs that are allowed in the community. These are the signs that we see that are on small trailers, typically parked in an outer lot or something like that. And the length of time, I believe, that's proposed right now is 300 days. Staff said that that might be difficult for them to enforce that.
Right. And when we look at ordinances, we're often looking at what other communities are doing as well. And I believe Mandan has a similar ordinance for temporary signage. And I want to say that their maximum number of days is 240 days in a year. So we're looking at other communities when we write ordinances to make sure that we're not too regulatory, but at the same time in line with what other communities are doing. So that was a point of contention for both sides, but also a good chance to compromise and come up with something that works for the stakeholders and city staff, because of course we don't want to write an ordinance that is essentially unenforceable. There has to be some measures of regulation in there, and I think that's really where the staff was driving in this direction.
And while there was a lot of focus on the temporary signs, there's a whole lot of other changes and refinements to this ordinance. And I think that one of the things that we should mention is that it also assembled the information all into one area to simplify this process, so that when commercial businesses and others are looking at incorporating signs into their property, they have hopefully a one-stop shop that they can go to where all that information exists.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Prior to this change, we actually had ordinance language in two different chapters of the city code. We have 14 chapters, 14 different codes for our ordinances, and we had a portion of it in Title IV, which is the building code regulation, and then we had a portion of it in Title 14, which is the zoning code regulation. So this shifts everything out of the building code and puts it into the zoning code, where it's more typically found in other communities as well. So a little bit of housekeeping work, but also, as we mentioned, a pretty significant overhaul, and not just temporary signage, but also permanent signage, the types of signs. You know, downtown we've got unique sign regulations as well, so...
The size of signs and what's allowed on a particular building.
Right, or the height for signs that are on a pole, a pylon sign, we commonly refer to those as. The height of that sign, the actual square footage of that sign, all of that was taken into consideration with this rewrite.
All right, so May 26th, it comes back to the commission then.
Yep, exactly.
Also, another call for public hearing was a zoning text amendment as well, and that had to do with off-street parking and loading zones. Quite a few adjustments in that area. This process didn't take quite as long. I believe it was last fall this group started meeting and talking and discussing this, and this is really in reaction to changes in our transportation and mobility and added some bicycle parking, a lot of adjustments to this off-street and loading zone.
Right, and I think it's fair to say that sometimes the indicator of when a text amendment is necessary is when we start to see a series of variance requests coming through the Board of Adjustment. Really what that is it's people seeking relief from the written law as it's written at that time. And it's a key indicator for the Community Development Department. When you start to see a series of these things coming forward, it's a good
chance to step back and take a look at the ordinance and see if there's pieces of the ordinance that need to be addressed. And in this situation, that's exactly what it is. Our lifestyles, our consumer habits are changing significantly. And we hear that from particularly franchise businesses that have a drive-through. We hear that often a high percentage of their sales actually go through the drive-through, which requires virtually zero parking in the lot. Mm-hmm. We do require stacking for the number of cars in a drive-through lane to make sure that we don't have impediments into the public right-of-way. But when you've got businesses that are on the national scale telling us, hey, your parking ordinance is maybe a little outdated, or you're requiring more than what other communities are, that's a good note for us to step back and say, okay, let's look around and see what everybody else is doing, make sure we make sense for what's right in Bismarck. But you're right, this was another opportunity to work with stakeholders in the community, businesses, excuse me, the Bismarck-Mandan Chamber EDC helped compile a good group of their stakeholders from that business community as well. So I'd like to think that this was a nice cooperative effort, and we're moving into a realization that we are changing our trends and patterns as consumers. And I think this is a good response to that.
And I believe it also passed through the Planning and Zoning Commission unanimously to move this forward. So there's a number of projects I understand that are waiting for this parking ordinance adjustments to happen as well.
Correct. We did have a couple of parking related variance requests that were denied by the Board of Adjustment, and those individuals, those groups, rather than appeal those decisions to the City Commission, chose to sit back and allow the ordinance to essentially catch up, because if the ordinance is approved the way it is drafted, those variance requests would be non-existent. There would be no need for a variance at that time. So given the situation with the pandemic and some of the adjustments that we've had to make to City Commission, we reached out to both of those organizations, and they said, we'll hold for a little bit and see what the ordinance looks like in a month or two. And if things go forward the way we're expecting, those projects should be able to move forward without any impediment.
We're moving on to the regular agenda from last night, and you had your police chief appear in front of the commission to give a report, which seems to happen pretty regularly this time of the year, and that is violations on speeding and noise ordinance in the community.
Right. Chief Dave Drayovich with the police department provided a report, and it's kind of an indicator of spring. When we hear exhibition driving, loud stereos, you've got people moving around the community, their windows are open, they're excited to be out on dry pavement again. So we do ask the chief to provide an update annually, and this year, he said enforcement is always something that they're focusing on, but being mindful that sometimes it's hard to be in every place at every time. And when those complaints come through, sometimes it's hard to enforce some of that stuff because you just simply, the officers weren't there to experience it firsthand. So they do take an educational approach when it comes to some of those things, but clearly exhibition driving, jackrabbit starts, things like that. If they're noticing those things, yeah, there's going to be some enforcement there as well. I thought one interesting component to Chief Dravich's discussion last night was late last fall, we adopted an ordinance that allows off-highway vehicles or ATVs on public streets. The chief said that there have been very few complaints in that regard, so people are appropriately using those vehicles to get around. He did say, again, education is a key piece to enforcement there. And sometimes it's just letting the drivers know that there are certain streets in our community that they just can't be operating those vehicles on. And the term is divided highway. And you may not think of East Century Avenue as a divided highway, but technically it is classified that way. So is State Street. So these corridors where we have high volumes of traffic and high rates of speed, those off-highway vehicles need to refrain from being in those corridors. Certainly you can cross over State Street at a perpendicular situation, but trying to keep up with traffic just isn't the right place and location for those types of vehicles. So the chief said, enforcement is sometimes tricky, but they're doing their best, and the number of violations are about on par with where they are every year. And again, this is a seasonal indicator that things are changing in Bismarck, and I suspect that we'll see this going forward year after year.
Yeah. Also last night, your finance director, Dmitry Chernok, gave a budget update. The process has already started. May is a big month in getting the budgets ready for, and this would be for 2021. So your finance director, along with Commissioner Marquardt, talked about what it's going to look like in the next few months to get that budget finalized.
Right. We've adjusted the budget schedule from years past, and we've extended our working days on the budget just because there are so many wild card features that are out there right now. But yeah, we've begun budget discussions. Much of that was spurred, obviously, by the pandemic and the potential revenue changes or shortfalls that might be affecting different departments. So we are lengthening that process. We're going to provide as much information as we can to the commissioners. Internally, we're looking at a little bit of an adjustment in how we've done this in the past. We typically have a budget committee, which is comprised of Commissioner Marquardt as our finance commissioner, Dimitri Cherniak, our finance director, Keith Hunke, city administrator, and myself. This year, we're also going to make sure that the commissioners that hold portfolios for the various departments within the city are part of those front-end conversations. So everybody has a very clear picture of what our budget outlook for 2021 is going to look like. And we've got some target dates that we'll need to hit. We want to have really May through July is going to be the bulk of our budget work and discussions. And our goal is to hit an August 4th date for a preliminary budget that we will then provide to Burleigh County. State law requires that we get that information to Burleigh County so they can set values and set budgets by August 10th. And then final budget adoption should be September 22nd. We'll have a public hearing at the second City Commission meeting in September, and we'll have everything wrapped up by that first week in October.
The process has begun.
It has. It's budget season.
It is, and it's probably a pretty unique situation without knowing how revenues are coming in for sales tax and other areas. Presents a lot more challenges this year, I think.
It does, and these challenges aren't unique to Bismarck, and we're fortunate that we do have some very stable revenue streams, whether it be through utilities and things like that. I think we're also fortunate that we're not a community that relies on local income tax. There are some communities that rely on income tax for their revenues, and I think those folks are going to struggle, especially considering the number of unemployed folks that are in the nation right now. So I don't want to give anybody the perspective that things are going to be all sunshine and roses. We will certainly be looking very, very closely at budgets, but I also am comfortable that we've got a very talented team here in our finance department. Our finance director has got a good handle on this. Of course, our city administrator is no stranger to the budget process. So we'll continue to report on this. I know the commissioners are anxious to get as much information as they can, and we will continue to share probably at every commission meeting between here and the end.
Okay. All right. Well, you'll bring it back to us. Another item on the regular agenda last night was this was approval of a second replat for the Kirkwood Mall area. It's called the Wachter Edition, but we all pretty much know it as the Kirkwood Mall area. I say second replat because it's probably the only time it's ever been replatted over there. And this would allow what it addresses is allowing some of that excess parking area now to be platted for additional commercial activity. We've seen some of it already, but this will allow more to come in.
Exactly. So 2 years ago or so, the Community Development Department did an adjustment for parking requirements for places like Kirkwood Mall. And really what that did is it relaxed the number of parking stalls, much like we were talking about earlier with the total parking rewrite. The Kirkwood Mall situation was almost done as a pilot project to see if those calculations that were done before could be relaxed a little bit, and if so, what would be the end result? Well, we've clearly seen three businesses show up in areas that used to be required parking. So now that that's been a success, the effort is to continue to allow that to happen. So we'll see redevelopment of much of the parking along 3rd Street on the west side of Kirkwood Mall. And I believe there's been some announcements of some franchise businesses, restaurant-based businesses that are looking at that area. So hopefully those continue to move forward. This is one more step in the process to help facilitate that change. And I think people are going to be excited when they start to see some of the changes coming in on that west side of Kirkwood Mall.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's interesting that these parking ordinances have been changed over time. You rarely see them all have been full in the past. Usually at Christmas, the holiday season is the only time you saw it absolutely full. So good use of property certainly creates more property taxes in the long run. And it's highly visible roads that this property sits on, the expressway as well as Third Street. So I can see where it would be very desirable property for new commercial activity.
Yeah, absolutely. We've heard from Brian Ritter with the Chamber EDC, when businesses come to the community, retail-based businesses come, they're looking really at two locations. And one of them, of course, is State Street, being the largest commercial corridor in our community. But then a close second is that 3rd Street Expressway, 7th Street corridor, because there's obviously a lot of retail that's going on in those locations. You got some hotels in there to support that activity. So it's going to be an exciting change as things evolve. And I think this is a sign of the times as malls continue to adapt to the changing landscape of retail. Mm-hmm. So it gives the Kirkwood Mall ownership an opportunity to reutilize or to infill some of their perhaps otherwise underutilized property.
Absolutely. The last item on the agenda last night had to do with a Class E liquor license that is currently unused in the city of Bismarck. No action was taken last night. City Attorney Janelle Combs was looking for some direction, which she received. And I believe that the decision was to just wait and hold that for a while.
Exactly right. And the Class E is a unique license. There's a limited number of Class E licenses that we have. Right now we have 16 of them in use, and we have one that is essentially on the shelf. The Class E license is for on and off sale of beer, beer only. So a lot of the Class E licenses that you see in use today are in places like convenience stores that provide off-sale beer as a component of their retail offerings. It also affords a business owner to have a bar that serves only beer. And I believe we have three bars in town that have beer offerings only. So we've had some businesses and some owners in the community inquire about this for looking at potential changes to their business structure. And when we took that to the commission and shared that information, there was a little bit of hesitation on the commissioner's part. Commissioner Oban was a little concerned that maybe now isn't the right time, given some owners might be struggling with the potential loss in sales or revenue tied up in other areas. And Commissioner Zenker was concerned that we are intending to rewrite some of the alcohol licenses. We've got a high number of unique licenses, and just from a housekeeping perspective, we'd like to consolidate some of those licenses and make them a little more manageable. So until we're able to get through some of those steps, the commission felt it was a good time just to pause and maybe look at it again, perhaps this fall, see what the economic recovery looks like down the road. But for now, for those businesses for those individuals that were asking about the Class E license, we're going to leave it on the shelf for now and not move forward. When we do get the direction from the commission to put that license out there, it is in a sealed bid situation. So we have a limited number of those licenses. Once you buy that license, it's yours to keep until you choose to sell it to someone else. We only sell them once here at the city. So it really becomes a business asset as well. For the commissioners, it just wasn't the right time to put that license out. So we'll revisit this in a few months and see where things are at the time.
Sounds good. Well, let's move off the agenda. Jason, can you give us an update about what's happened with the EOC? You were very much involved in that, and what's going on with city facilities at this time?
Certainly. So the EOC, for anybody that's wondering, it's Emergency Operations Center, and it is a component of the city. It's just that. It's a response to an emergency in our community. The last time we saw the activation of the EOC was the 2011 Missouri River flood. Of course, that took the bulk of the summer to deal with. That situation was completely different than this one. With the flood, there was very measurable work that was coming from the EOC. There were sandbags getting filled. There was sand at the event center for that mass sandbag central event. There were HESCO barriers and dike walls getting built. And a lot of that stuff you could point at and say, that's a direct result of the EOC. This situation was completely different. We didn't have quite the same product to point to and say, here's the work that we did. This is how we got this stuff done. But I kind of joked with the commissioners at our last meeting, for me, the term EOC actually stood for everything other than COVID. So we were really dealing with all the components of the pandemic that weren't tied directly to healthcare. So within the EOC, there's also the DOC, the Department Operations Center, and that's really the Bismarck Burley Public Health nursing staff. They're the ones that are doing a lot of the contact tracing. They're helping with some of those mass testing events at the senior living communities. Of course, they helped with the event that we had here in Bismarck. So the DOC, the nursing side of Bismarck Burley Public Health, is continuing to do all of that work. We that were part of the EOC, we were complementing that work and then also adjusting to all the different varying factors that were out there. For the most part, the EOC is now primarily virtual. So a lot of us, all of us at the EOC have gone back to our regular offices, and we're trying to get back to whatever business as usual looks like, but still we're meeting a couple of times during the week to make sure that all of those objectives and the goals that we were trying to achieve are still being discussed. We're not just simply turning our back on this by any means, but we are shifting more towards our typical roles in the office, but continuing to focus on COVID-related things as they come forward.
So your physical space, it remains in place, and should you need to go back into that mode, it's there and available and ready to go now.
That's exactly right. We basically turned off the lights last week and left a lot of things in place. So if we do need to remobilize, everything is there for us again. That was one of the biggest undertakings initially, was just getting the physical presence of the EOC established. It sounds so simple, but tables and chairs and technology was a huge piece of us getting up and running. We became quite apparent how reliable or how much we rely on technology to get our jobs done. So we didn't want to dismantle any of that. We didn't want to have to go through that restart process again. So we basically turned off the lights and came back to our regular offices with the anticipation that if we need to do it again, it's there and we're ready.
And you mentioned you're back in your office. All the staff has moved back to their regular office space, but the City County building on 5th and Thayer, as well as other facilities, remain in a locked position at this point. It doesn't mean people aren't available. Everything's operating as normal, but the purpose in locking the doors, obviously, is you don't want people just moving into the building. There's a process to follow. If you need help and you need to talk to someone at the city, obviously the website is probably the first point that people should go to, at bismarcknd.gov. It's there, it's available, it's robust. You also have a Facebook page, bismarcknd.gov, at Facebook. All that information is there and available, and then call the office, make an appointment, or ask your question. You do have a way for people to enter the building, but they're going to have to go through a screening process, as I understand.
That's exactly right. So we continued to be open. There were just a few days at the early onset, the middle of March, where we were technically, we just had to call time out for a little bit and figure out what we could continue to do and what we needed to put in the holding pattern. But yeah, a lot of us are here at the City County building. We do have some folks that are still working remotely. That's working very well for them. So we're not rushing back to the building. We're continuing to follow all the state guidelines with social distancing and sanitizing the building and cleaning. That's an ongoing operation here. But yeah, for the public, for anybody that does have business here, we would encourage them to call ahead. Much of our information, as you mentioned, is on our website. We can hopefully try and field as many questions as we can over the phone. But we also understand there is some need for face-to-face business. And if anybody is coming to the facility, we do have a series of screening questions, and they're the same kind of questions you'd anticipate anywhere else. You know, they're basically symptomatic questions. Are you sick? Have you been sick? Do you have a fever? You know, some of those top indicators for the COVID presence. If the individuals that are screened are healthy and well, we welcome them into the building, and they can go about their business as they would have in the past.
Sounds good. We have to wrap up. We're running out of time, but we wanted to remind people that census is still going on. If you haven't filled out your census information for your residence, your property, please get online and do that. I believe that the deadline for putting that information in has been extended, but it's an easy thing to do. It only takes a few minutes at the most. So I want to encourage people to move forward on that. Also, I want to remind everyone that we have a primary election coming up on June 9th. Dakota Media Access, along with the League of Women Voters, just completed some interviews with candidates for those contested races in our community. Unfortunately, we only have a few races that are the local races that are being contested. One is with the Bismarck City Commission. We have two positions being available. We have four candidates, one of them being Commissioner Mark Orders, an incumbent, as well as three challengers that were in our studios last week doing interviews with us. We should be able to have those up, I believe, within the next 24 hours. We'll have those online at freetv.org. You can watch those interviews. It'll also be playing on our government access channels. And we have school board candidates from both Bismarck and Mandan that'll be on that same page at freetv.org, where you can look and watch the candidates, hear what they have to say, how they're going to serve in their various offices. And it's good information, just part of the information that people need when they're making a determination on how and who to vote for. So those things are coming up.
As a voter in Burleigh County, I appreciate all of that information. I like to make sure that I understand where people are at and what their thoughts are about our community. So as someone that plans to fill out their vote by mail very quickly here, I appreciate knowing that that information is out there, and I'm sure others will take advantage of it as well.
Hopefully everybody's received a ballot by now. It's close. I think they're still coming in, possibly, but the application is first. You should have that application in your hands. Secretary of State's office, call them, get a hold of them if you haven't received an application. Once you send the application to your county auditor, then you get your ballot, which goes back. So it's a process.
Yep, that's right. And those ballots can either be mailed in or they can be hand-delivered to the building. We have a drop box out front where people can confidently put their sealed ballot in the drop box, and the county election staff are checking that box frequently and dealing with those ballots as they come in.
Good to know. I didn't know there was a drop box out there. It's mm-hmm. convenient. Jason, before we leave, do you want to talk real quick about Public Works Week, National Public Works Recognition Week next week?
Absolutely. Yeah, every year the American Public Works Association recognizes the value of public works and what it brings to our community. Of course, here we really have two sides of public works. We have Jeff Heinz, and the side of public works that he works with is oftentimes he refers to as the dry side of public works. So there you've got the landfill, the forestry division, roads and streets, street lights and traffic signals. And on the other side is Michelle Closey's side of public works, and that's often referred to as the wet side public works, where you've got water, wastewater, and stormwater. So we like to use that opportunity to talk about public works and all the wonderful things that they do for our community to help us look spiffy and bright, and having those reliable resources like fresh, safe drinking water, adequate volumes at the hydrants for firefighters, and all of those things are a component of public works. So we like to tip our hat to them. Unfortunately, we would have done a public works day where we would invite families, especially children, to come out and get on some of the equipment, tour the building. That's been a really successful event the last couple of years, but another element of the situation that we're in is we're just going to have to postpone that or potentially reschedule for a time later this fall, but hopefully we can get back to a regular schedule next year with that. There is one other thing I would like to mention, a message from our police chief and the police department for anybody that parks downtown or works downtown on a regular basis. Many know that there's been relaxed parking enforcement during the pandemic just to help ease some of the pressure on the retail businesses that are down here. Starting on the Tuesday following Memorial Day, so May 26th, parking enforcement will resume to its full capacity. So for anybody that has enjoyed not necessarily having to move their cars or to use the ramps, we would encourage you to get back in those ramps or get out and move your car as often as you need to, because parking enforcement will reinstate the last week of May.
Good to know. Got to move my car.
Park it in a ramp.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for all the information again, Jason. Thanks for
my pleasure
joining us back here again. Hope to see you in a couple of weeks.
I plan to be here. Thanks for everything you do, Mary.
All right. You take care.
You too.
And thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, visit bismarcknd.gov or call 701-355-1300. If you have suggestions, comments, or issues you would like addressed in future episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access, Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on Radio Access 102.5 FM. It's also available as a podcast on radioaccess.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.